Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to the first ever episode of Consciously with Tegan. I am so excited to be here and to be starting this. I have been wanting to do this for the longest time, but I know everyone and their freaking mom is hosting a podcast at this point. But, you know, I think I have some things to say. I'm a climate change scientist, if you don't know, and that is my entire personality. But I thought I would share things like sustainable fashion, girlhood, what it's like to be a content creator, all of that good stuff, but from the perspective of a scientist. And yeah, I would love you to join me on this process. And this is the first ever episode with one of my favorite people. As soon as I decided to do this process, I was like, Kansani is the first person that I need on this podcast. If you don't know who she is a writer, a blogger, a content creator. She works in fashion, she works in media, she does all the things, wears all the hats, and also makes incredible clothing. So, of course, she had to be my number one. She focuses a lot on African history and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. So, yeah, before I ramble on too long, let's get right into it. I am so excited that you have decided to join me today. You are literally one of my favorite people to watch and stalk online, as I've said before. So yeah, thank you for being here again. Do you want to just tell the people, tell the masses who you are? Introduce yourself for those who don't know you.
I guess that's a good idea. So my name is Kensani Mkakule. It's so crazy to say, like, what do I do? I do a lot of things. But yeah, I work in fashion. I'm a amateur fashion historian. I sew, I craft, I love that. I guess I'm a content creator, and primarily my interests are around sustainable fashion and finding indigenous African knowledge and ways to find better methods of the way we use now. See that if there are, if there's like ancient knowledge to modern problems, as well as just, uncover a history that I think is often very overlooked.
Yeah, 100%. That really comes through on your social media platforms. I mean, as I said, I stalk it regularly. I'm obsessed. Especially when you include the history in the process of the garment making. It's so informative and like juicy, juicy. I just want to like, I'm hooked to everything you say. So yeah, you do a lot of posting on social media, and I just wanted to ask like how you got into that. Like, how did you grow your platform? What drew you to social media in the first place? I feel like it's such a, I don't know, it's such a controversial career choice. I mean, it's obviously not your career, but it's like kind of side hustle thing. So I'd love to hear like what got you into that.
Yeah, dude, I'm older than a hill, to be honest. I've had unmitigated internet access since I was like 6 years old.
Oh, real, real.
Yeah, and my actual like initial sort of start was back in like 2011 when everyone still had blogs and Tumblrs and stuff, and I was disgustingly obsessed with Tavi Gevinson, like to a really ridiculous point. And when I was like 13, 14, I was like, what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna be a fashion blogger, and I'm gonna be like Tavi, and I'm gonna get invited to Fashion Week, and I'm gonna go. And it did happen,
Absolutely.
which is crazy.
No, as it should, as it should.
yeah.
Manifestation is so real.
Yeah, wild. And also just I had no idea what I was even getting myself into. But so it was that sort of start, and then there was this like mass migration once Instagram became like this very viable thing that everyone did, and like no one really, and I wish I'd seen it a little earlier, like no one really wrote anything anymore, no one really read anything anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it became like,
Around
oh,
what time? Around what time was that?
this is like happening in
Like how old were you?
2014. I think
Yes,
I was like 16, 17.
okay. I was like 13, and that was the first like social media I had. We went straight to Instagram. Crazy,
That is so
crazy.
wild to me. My first social media, we had like AOL chats and MySpace. Like
Yeah, but I
I'm
missed
also
that
saying, like
era.
I am older than a hill. Like
No, but I still got the Tumblr era. You know, I was taking my
yeah.
like
Okay.
grunge
Good. Good. I think
images.
Tumblr
I
is a
still
very
got
essential
that.
part of anyone's like upbringing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Will you see some of the most insane stuff ever? Yes, but like.
Genuinely.
Will it make you a better person? No, but
yeah, formative. You can tell who had Tumblr when they were younger. I always interacted with those people.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then you moved on into the Instagram space and everyone stopped writing and it was all visual.
Yeah. But I wasn't even that interested in that for a very long time. And then I went to fashion school and I was super excited to be like behind the scenes. And like, I was like, hey, cool. You know, my first initial plan was I was going to be a fashion designer. It was going to be super cool. And then I realized that sucks. Don't want to do that. And then I ended up, I ended up working in marketing for a really long time. And marketing for all kinds of weird stuff, like everything except fashion. Like I've done fucking, are we allowed to swear? Sorry.
Yes, yeah, we can swear. I think no children are listening to this.
Yeah, like I've had clients that are like Bora Voice and I've done like TikTok.
That's so random. I thought you were going to be like, yeah, like maybe like skincare, which is like kind of closely related.
Yeah, no. I've been absolutely removed, yeah. sometime in the last year or so, I was like, okay, in order to get really good at my job, which is working in like digital social media marketing, I was like, okay, let me go like actually test out myself all these things that I am always telling all our clients, like whatever. So I spent like a good, I think like last year I had like 5,000 Instagram followers, right? And I was like, from, I think it was it August to July, I was like, I'm going to be so online. I'm going to post almost every day. I had this whole insane content calendar planned out. I dedicated like entire Saturday, Sundays to like batch filming content, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But it kind of worked out in like a month, literally. And I'm not even joking. Like in a month, they went from 5,000 followers to 50, which was like
50, 50.
Yeah.
Holy
right. Like times 10.
That is hectic. Geez, so that everything that all the like TikTok content creator advice people give, like all of that is actually real. Like be consistent, all of that.
You know what? That's
unfortunate.
I totally agree, but I think it's also like a matter of, I mean, if you think about it yourself as anyone who's ever been online, like what makes you follow someone or what interests you is like, I think if you make something that people are interested in and also something that hasn't been done to death, you will attract whoever you want to see it.
Yeah, and I really think that's your strength. Like, who is doing historical African fashion like you? Like, I've never seen anything like that.
I hope no one else. Otherwise, I've lost my whole shit.
Don't worry. Well, you did it first, so it's okay.
Yeah, that's true.
You have that you've built your own new niche, and like you've created this thing that people didn't know that they were interested in. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, like social media, it's kind of like dating. It's like if you gotta put your heart on your sleeve and like just gotta be a lover girl. You gotta say like, this is the thing I care about, and I'm not gonna be embarrassed about being so passionate about this thing. And there will be a lot of flops along the way, 100%. Like, but like, you know, you guys all will see that I'm just, you know,
just a lover girl at heart. Right. No, I love that. It's true. I mean, people always say like, you gotta just be yourself, and
Yeah, it Who sounds so corny. Yeah.
It's true. But yeah, I'm at that age where I'm like trying to figure out like, okay, who am I? What is going on? Everything is on fire and what's like the world is changing and what's going on. But
how old are you now? 23?
Yeah, 23, yeah. Just turned 23 this month.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting age.
I mean, you could not pay me to be 23 again.
That's not what I want to hear.
No. It's a very transformative year. Like, it's your big Jordan year, but I promise you, like, by the end of this year, you'll have a really good sense about like everything. Honestly,
I look forward to it. I'm just so excited for my prefrontal cortex. Everyone says if you wake up and you're like, oh, I have clarity. That's what I cannot wait for.
Yeah, I will not. Yeah, it's good. The day you turn 25, and I'm not even joking, like clockwork, like the morning I turned 25, I was suddenly like, okay, I'm an adult. I understand everything.
Everyone says this. Can't wait. Okay, but enough about my age. I want to ask you about your blog posts on hanger management. One of the blog posts that really caught my eye is titled, "In South Africa, Not All Fast Fashion is Evil." I was like, whoa, that is a good ass title. Let me read what's going on there. I was so interested because you attended a Pick and Pay event and you really honed in on the idea that sustainability is so nuanced. So I'd love to hear about this realization you had and what your experience is like going to these types of events where it's maybe not necessarily slow fashion, but they're really impacting communities in a good manner.
Yeah, I think it's like, you've got to have like, I think especially it's like, I think all sustainable stuff, like it matters by context, I think, more than anything. And I think especially as people who aren't living in like global north and the west, we have very different like issues and like, you know, things that happen, right?
100%. Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, and my knee-jerk reaction used to be for a very long time, like, okay, I see a fashini, I go, ew. I see Pick and Pay clothing, I go, disgusting. Mr. Price, kill her, right?
Absolutely.
But at the same time, like, do you know, like Edgar's, there was a time when they were like in huge economic trouble and there was really great article, I think it was in, I forgot, some newspaper, but they were talking about how like if Edgar's itself had to like crash in South Africa, that's an insane amount of jobs that would be lost. Like there are so many people involved in that thing. And
yeah,
and a lot of these places are like that. Like they're so like interwoven into like our economy and the way like our world is shaped and stuff. So like things like TFG, Pick and Pay, like their ultimate goal is obviously they want to make profit, totally understandable. But these dudes are also, in the most ironic way, because they want to compete so badly with your Zara's and H&M's, they've had to invest a lot in local manufacturing and local production, which is like one, made an insane amount of jobs. It's really good because we have had a very struggling like textile industry since. Yeah, since the end of apartheid, like honestly, we have this booming sector, and you know, like we used to actually be one of the best in the world. Like Armani, I think it was, used to produce like suits,
yeah. Oh, in, like, the 80s. I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were like top 10.
Doing a lot of reading now this week for my dissertation that hopefully will be able to be in sustainable fashion, and there's so, it's rich history. We were, as you said, booming in Woodstock, the garment factories there. It's actually so, I mean, for someone like me who, you know, was born post-apartheid, I lived in this like born free era. I just, that all that history has been squashed and I didn't know about any of this. And it is rich and so interesting. So yeah, definitely understand what you're saying.
Imagine, even think about something like the Women's March. That was also like mostly led by textile workers. Like, a lot of those women were, like, sewers, they were working in factories, making clothes. So, like, there's just sort of a different history to that. So, when I went to Paxton's Pick and Pay thing, so it's cool. So, when I went to this Pick and Pay event, it was, Tando Ntuli, she had a little capsule collection with them. She's Anna Edmungu's. She's absolutely fantastic. And I was speaking to her on the night, and also just realizing, like, this was really good for her in terms of, like, okay, she got all this great, like, new access to manufacturing that's really hard to find as like a young designer and understand, and already the testing out, etc., is like huge burden to carry, especially cost wise. Also just getting this really good understand, getting access to this big retail space. I mean, there are how many Pick and Pay clothing in South Africa? You're gonna reach an audience probably never would have. And also, I mean, they're doing their best. Small, you know, I'm about the 1% improvement. So they're like producing locally, like in, I think it was Lesotho and Eswatini now. They were using, I think it was recycled polyester and viscose, and then also again, like, this is, okay, like, it matters more to me that, like, okay, you've won, okay, you're trying to tackle some sort of waste, some sort of, you're closing some sort of loop, you are ensuring they are predominantly Black women workers who are getting paid a somewhat livable wage, getting good work, also like good quality work, etc. And a lot of the, like, a lot of our, like, fast fashion companies in Africa are like that. Like, Pick It, like, TFG right now, they're, and even Mr. Price as well, actually, they're investing a lot of money into making sure we set up really good factories here. And part of the reason very few people like to manufacture here is because we have such good trade unions, particularly in the fashion industry, like, textile workers here definitely live a better quality of life. than elsewhere, but it does make it a bit more expensive to produce. Yeah.
Yes.
But you know, I'd rather that at least like that's a nice thing to have. Like when you see that made in South Africa label, like yes.
Oh yeah. Right? Definitely.
Yeah, yes, this thing definitely might, there's an intention, they want to sell like 1,000 of these things, but like, you know what, rather than 1,000 of these things here, than the most eco-green brand from like the United States or Europe.
100%, because I mean, it's stimulating our economy here, and you know, when you're buying from Shein and all those other things, you're stimulating economies that already are fine. Like, I always think about the North saying things to the developing countries and, you know, to the South, and they're like, hey, like we need to degrow, we need to invest in the green economy, we need to like slow things down, but actually that's just going to hinder all the developing countries. So I like the idea of supporting our local economies so we can not catch up per se, but you know, not be hindered.
Yeah, it's like and also, you know, I like rather the devil, you know, because also the fun thing as well about like our fashion industry sort of being so like developing is we don't have these like long set structures and institutions in place. So we're actually able to avoid a lot of the same mistakes that we've seen elsewhere. Yes. You know, we've got
what's that called? It's like leapfrog. There's like a term for it. Someone used it in my class this week. It's like a leapfrog, maybe leapfrog economics, where you can skip all the bad things and like you learn from the history.
That's so cute.
There's like a term for it. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the fun thing. And I think a lot of these like local companies are there. I think they're a lot more open to, you know, trying, I think, those things out. And I think, I mean, obviously, you know, it's always about increasing shareholder value. Like,
gotta increase shareholder value.
Gotta do it for
stakeholders.
But I've seen a more earnest attempt by like your Mr. Price's, Fashini's, Pick and Pay Clothing to actually amend these things and make at least some meaningful steps. You know, they're not okay. Well, I mean, no one is 100% sustainable, but like the fast fashion here has, I mean, we're just not talking about the kind of levels of absolute like corporate like malignances like an H&M or a Zara. It's like
it's
a little bit more benign extent.
yes and that's what I always say, like I from a company I want 75%. You don't need to be 100%. No one needs to be 100%. From myself as an individual, I do not need to be 100%. Actually, I had such an interesting conversation yesterday in one of my classes with someone. I have a Starbucks reusable cup, and obviously we're boycotting Starbucks. I've always hated Starbucks. I've never actually bought things from them.
I've never gotten it. Yeah.
No, I mean, I was there. Hey, no, when I was 15, I was a basic white girl. When I visited family in England, I was like, oh my God, Starbucks, we don't have that here. And then it was the worst coffee I'd ever tasted. And then I found out that there's like a lot of exploitation in the process of getting their coffee and all of that. So I was like, no. Anyways, so I had this conversation with someone about like, oh, I have this reusable cup. I'm not going to throw it away and get a new one because it kind of defeats the purpose. So what should I do? In the end, like I just stuck a sticker. My friend had like a African, like the Climate Justice Charter sticker. I just popped that on top of the logo.
Oh, I like that.
But at the end, it's like exactly what I needed. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not 100%. I'm not a perfect activist. I'm not a perfect sustainability environmentalist, like all of that. So if I'm going to expect 75% for myself, and then I'm going to expect 75% from a brand. Like, I want to see you doing as much as you can. If you can't, like there's compromises. There's certain things we can compromise on, certain things we can't. Like if you need to use polyester instead of using natural fabrics because you're closing the loop in one way, understandable. Let's like chat about it, you know, like going into things in a like conversational, like, yeah, I don't know. I think
transparency.
Essentially, I'm rambling, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah, it's about 100%. Transparency.
Like make the decision you got to make, but like, let me know why, how, what are your next steps? Like,
absolutely.
Always progress over perfection.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that really, like, yeah, this article that you wrote, the one where you went to the Pick and Pay event, really like encapsulated that idea, and it's so well written. So anyone who's listening, I really suggest giving that a read. But yeah, I also you touched on in one of your articles, you touched on South Africans buying from South African designers. And that was an interesting, that's an interesting take. I feel like no one talks about this. We always talk about like, support local, da 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 da. But when it gets down to the brass tacks, it's interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I've been like the most annoying person you've ever met. And I would always yell at people. I'm like, I think it's so insane that you would go spend $1,000 or like $3,000 at Zara, or you guys are doing these 20k Shein hauls or whatever, when you could buy local designer, like really good quality stuff, like you could get a really nice shirt at the last ever. And then also people started like getting at me. They're like, okay, cool. So where? Quickly. And also, where can I go that's not like, you know, where can I go that's not like some big brown, and I mean, those are cool, but like some big brown sack linen dress. Or like, you know, there's a certain like aesthetic that a lot of like
aesthetic. No, 100%.
Which it's that, not.
That's partly why I got into. It's true. No, it's partly why I got into sustainability, because I was like, or like into posting on social media, because I wanted to be like, no, you can still be cute.
Yeah, yeah. Not like beige. And that's like yeah, like because why everything is big blobby? Even I was saying that I used to also say about like about gender neutral fashion as well. Like, why is everything always this giant blob tent thing? Like, what is so what is so non gender neutral about a cute miniskirt?
Absolutely. Actually, that is the real question, to like, be honest.
You said gender neutral.
That's what we need to be.
It's always short skirts. Cool.
I'm here for the short skirt agenda.
So when everyone started like calling me out and they're like, okay, cool, where? And I was like actually looking at it and I was like, damn, the options are, I mean, okay, it's not that the options are limited, but like they're really hard to find. So there was a time I was like really invested. I was like, I was going to build this big index of like, okay, brands to shop according to like all these different fun tastes. So like, if you're like a goth girl, I'll go here. And I would have been like, okay, I've already checked it for, and also anyone who wants to do this is welcome to steal. I realized once I was in it, way too much work. But I'm like, I've already checked before, like they produce locally, this is where their fabrics are from, here you go. If you're like super preppy, these are the places, they meet this check mark, here it is, yada, yada, yada. But, one, to find a lot of South African brands is, like it's an actual hard like piece of work. You've got to really search there.
Research. That's a whole like dissertation on itself.
Which, like, I mean, the average person, dude, like you come home from work, you've had the worst time ever. You've got to cook, you've got to clean, you've got to still go exercise, etc. And then now you want to go make me spend like 3 hours where to buy a nice coat? Like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, a lot of these designers, like, I think a lot of South African like designers, like these younger labels, beautiful concepts, great ideas, but like they haven't like yet figured out like one of the biggest things is like have amazing customer service. That's like a big one.
Oh yes. I've had so many bad experiences.
See, one needs the most original product. I don't need a dissertation on how this relates to womanhood in South Africa. What I need to know is that when I pay you, you will send this thing to me in time.
Absolutely. Like, and you won't like scam me, Loki. Oh,
yeah, and no, you'll respond to my emails in a timely fashion. Like, I'm not saying you have to respond right away, but like, bestie.
Within like 2 weeks, please, at least. Like, let's be real.
Why am I chasing you? And then even other stuff also, like I know for a lot of designers also, it's really hard to scale, like it's so hard to get the like supply chain right, especially if you want to produce locally. It's really hard to find the good CMTs and then also build up the relationships. And when you're not also doing these huge like MOQs and stuff, like order quantities, really hard to get the pricing right, etc. And then also like what else is wrong with it? But it's just like there's a lot of like business, boring business stuff that I think a lot of people forget. They have beautiful artistic vision, amazing ideas, but like there's so much other stuff to running. It's why I don't even like run a business, because it's that is some of the hardest work you'll ever do.
Yeah, it's like an iceberg. You see the fun stuff on social media, but you don't actually see all the like serious business economics. Yeah, and my brain doesn't work like that, so I'm sure it would be very difficult, even if you have this creative vision and like, yeah, I don't know. It's a lot.
No, 100%. And I always say it's like, I think it's like every month to like clockwork. I think actually I can even say this across the continent. There's always one African designer that's like, oh no, big brand A has stolen my IP. They've copied this and that, etc. And I'm like, yeah, you know, definitely in terms of like the power dynamics of that sucks. But also, if I was going to buy this thing from you, how easy was that going to be for me? Then, because also that's the reality of the game. You are competing with an H&M, you are competing with a Zara, you're competing on the age of convenience.
100%.
And even as myself, someone who doesn't mind, I don't mind like a 2 week wait time or a month wait time, et cetera, but like, how easy are you making that process for me? Why is it like you are doing me a favor when I buy.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, if you really need something urgently, you're just gonna pop down to the shop and go get something. So
yeah, you really have to. And I always say this to like anyone who's has like a fashion product, like, you really have to. You've got to. It's honestly one of the most Herculean tasks. Honestly, and I get it. It's actually really hard. You have to do something crazy, but like, you have got to offer an experience that like someone would be like, okay, you know what? I'm not gonna go buy Mr. Price for, because I would rather shop from this little brand A, and everything I get here is so well made, so good. They always should be reliable. Like a queen when I'm there. Like, I feel like the most important customer. Like, whatever, you know.
Get that. And I think that's also the power that local brands have. That some of them I feel like don't even utilize. Like, you have this power to create this like connection with your customers, and I think that's what helps make you stand out. And like, I'll go support certain brands. I know the people. Like, I know who's running it. They care about, you know, maybe not me, but they care about my purchase. That's such a power. That really can be leveraged.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. Like, I've started making like a commitment recently. I'm like, okay, I mean, I haven't shopped in like a couple of years, but now that I am shopping again, I'm like, I wanna local brands, find someone like really cute who does something really interesting. So I'm doing a lot of research on my head, but also like the brands that I've interacted with recently are amazing, like really wonderful people, and they're so like efficient, and they're so like, they're with me the whole time. They're like, oh, hey, Kintani. Also, we just made this new thing. Do you think you'd like this? I think it's kind of your style, etc.
Love that. Yeah.
Little handwritten notes, you know.
So special, yeah.
Being as communicative as possible. Like, oh my God, sorry, dude. We had a little mix up. This is going to take a bit longer. I don't mind. That's okay. Like,
you know. Yes, again, the transparency in every aspect.
Literally.
As long as you tell me.
It's like dating. Great. Like, just talk to me, dog. Just talk to
yes.
me.
So just, it's a two-way street, yeah.
And also, don't stop making brown sacks. Make some fun clothes. It's okay. It's okay for sustainable fashion to be fun. It's okay. It can be cute and exciting.
100%. Yes. On that note, you make such fun clothes. You make the most fun, the cutest. I'm like, I'm so obsessed. Take a shot every time I say I'm obsessed with you. Like, honestly, that will be a fun. But I want you to tell me a bit more about like your process when it comes to sewing. So I have like two questions relating to like your process. I want to know more about the research behind how you know basically what clothes to make. I mean, it's such an intricate, the details are so fine. So I'd love to know about your research process. Obviously, I'm a scientist, like that's what I'm going to ask about. And then I also want to ask about the creative process of the actual practicality of sewing, and I'd love to hear more about what got you into sewing, and yeah, I can ask my further questions on that.
Yeah.
I'm bombarding you.
so like I said earlier, like I used to have this big dream, I was gonna be a fashion designer, etc. Absolutely fell out of love with it because it's hard work, like for all the reasons we've kind of discussed until now. But during, and I had stopped doing it after varsity for a while, and then during the pandemic I had all this free time on my hands, and I'm not sure what. Oh yeah, I'm a huge like history nerd. I love history. And I ended up just on this rabbit hole because I was like, actually, I went to school and I learned all this stuff about fashion history, and it was all European. Like, I know everything about like Victorian era, the bustle periods, the Romantic era, Georgian fashion, medieval fashion, late medieval, Tudor, Renaissance, yada yada yada. But I have never heard that same extensive like thoughts applied to anything on the African continent, like,
which is insane, because right? This is where we are. You would think we would learn about our own history,
right? You would think that. And I still don't think that's a very common thing in even any African fashion school syllabus right now. I know there are people working to do
I spoke to someone recently at one of the fashion schools here, and they would like tell me all the things they did, and they never once touched on like South African or African fashion
history. Right.
So I think that's still the case, yeah.
Yeah, and I think also part of it is there's still this like very pervasive narrative of like naked bushmen across the continent. So there's this idea that we didn't wear clothes before colonialism happened, which makes absolutely no sense because a really big part of the way like African history and stories are captured is through cloth. And there are these beautiful weaving, knitting, embroidery traditions across the continent, like if you think about like Kente and Asaoke and you know all this gorgeous stuff, and people use this and they capture different parts of their like ethnicities and their cultures, etc. But yeah, during COVID, had a ton of time on my hands, and I was just starting to, I just started to question. I was just like, okay, cool. I'm at a point now, I'm having the craziest existential crisis along with everyone. And I think I want to connect a lot more deeply to my roots and my culture. And, you know, the easiest way for me to do that has always been like fashion. But I don't know, I can't find anything. I asked my parents, like, okay, we always wear this and this to this kind of event or whatever. Like, why? They have no idea. And also at this point, I have like one grandparent left, so they can't tell me either. And I just, I started doing this research. I was looking at everything and I was like, okay, cool. There's also lots of interesting stuff here. Like, shwe shwe is this very common fabric we use in a lot of like traditional clothing in South Africa, but it isn't like, it's not from here. It's not like an indigenous textile, right? That's like a thing. It uses a Indonesian printing method, and it was originally supposed to be like in the Netherlands. The story is like it didn't sell well there, etc. Or a bunch of like missionaries were here and they gifted it to some like kings. Actually, the one guy they gave it to was King Mshweshwe. So that's where he gets the name.
Okay.
Stuff like that. But it's also also interesting because it's such a big part of like our stuff. So that's kind of basically like how my research process always goes. There's always like one question and then I end up going like down this thing. So like recently, like when I've been making my wedding dress, right? It's like, okay. For me, and also maybe that's just a reflection of like how maybe just I'm so urbanized and so disconnected from my culture. Like the only time I interact with like traditional ethnic anything is like mostly weddings, and I'm just really interested, okay, like so how would, like we have like these very typical, especially like Bedi culture, like very typical styles of the way dress, super colorful, etc. And I'm like, okay, where does that come from, and like what does that mean, and is it like I'm also interested in like if I change this one very signature element of it, like so if I remove the prints or something, is that still like an African design? If I change the silhouette a little bit, is that still African, or like, you know, what are these like essential components and why do they exist and what do they mean?
No, this is literally engineering. You're literally a woman in STEM. Like,
I tell everyone I'm a scientist, dude.
You literally are. I'm from a scientist to another scientist, girl. Like I can see it.
And
it's like cool. Asking the important questions.
And it's cool. I have this one friend, Tinugo. She's amazing. She does like botanical dyeing and stuff, but like with like indigenous plants and stuff. And we have like a similar cultural ethnic background. And she was telling me that if you think about it, like very realistically, so like my mom's side of the family, they're Tsonga, right? And a big like stereotype of Tsonga was very, very colorful, like these very like saturated pinks, blues, yellows that we wear for all kinds of stuff. Like if you think of like a shibelani, very, very colorful. Mm. But she was like, if you think about, because I mean 100 years ago maybe whatever, maybe more than 100, but she was like, if you think about what, how people would have dyed things or how they would have colored stuff, it would have been the fauna, flora, whatever around, and there aren't that many plants like in Limpopo, like southern Mozambique around the Limpopo River, that could ever produce any of these kind of colors. It probably might have been a lot more close to a lot of reds, oranges, browns, etc. So that's also like a fun, interesting thing. Like this thing that I've always just thought was so intrinsic to like my culture is also like, where is that from? Who decided that? Like,
yeah, that's so interesting. Also, I love that it brings in, I mean, like in so many of our class discussions and like in the new climate change movement on the front lines, we talk about bringing in indigenous cultures. And I love that it's so interwoven with the environment, like, and the history, like you explaining there, like you can deduce things by looking at the geography of things. It's so interesting, and it just shows like the importance of including this in the discussions that we
have. Absolutely, and that's one of the things I really have enjoyed is like, and that was even like one of the conversations that also made me feel like, okay, there's this like huge crisis we have now as like very modern people, like overproduction, waste, etc. The more like research I do, and I've had conversations also with other people like in like South America, Asia, etc., and they also have like, I think everyone's getting to a lot of similar places, but like there are all these old practices that we used to have in terms of like the way we collected raw materials, the way we use them, the way we handled the waste, etc., that it's like we kind of actually figured out how to make clothes a very long time ago. Then the industrial revolution happened and we just went absolutely backwards. Like we a lot of this stuff down really well. I think about something like bark cloth. Like, what a great idea. I don't think, like, tree bark gets used a lot and stuff, but, like, that kind of thing. Pineapple leather or cactus leather, like, all these other things. Like,
there's
already all this cool stuff that people find in their environments, or even the way people care for and treat stuff. Like, I've been, like, doing a lot of research into, I think just because it's one of the easiest ones to research, but, like, lot of West African fashion history, and the absolute like care and history and tradition involved in the way they embroider stuff, they bead, they weave fabrics is amazing, because at the same time you're seeing this amazing, beautiful, stunning garment, but you're also like, you are seeing an entire people's history, and these are like passed down skills, and getting a greater understanding of like these different groups, etc., in a way that you I don't think you ever really would with like a Western garment in the modern day.
Right? Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
that's beautiful. And there's so many of these, and I think for a lot of people, I think especially like for I think Black people, it always like caring about the environment is always a bit tricky, because I think there are a lot of these Westerners who get in, dominate the space, and talk over people. Even though it's like
100%.
A lot of your forefathers made these problems, actually, right?
Literally.
And that's also a thing I always try to like sort of bring about as well. Like, yes, of course we care about the planet, we care about the actual Earth itself, but you know what's in the environment? People. Like, caring about the environment is also there caring about people. And
there's the key point that a lot of scientists forget about. Right? A lot of those people, the
we
northern...
are also a part of the environment. Like, the environment is not just trees in the sky, it's also us. And caring about people involves, like, I care about their livelihoods and their quality of life, but also care about your history. I care about your language. I care about your culture. I care about your traditions. And a lot of these things also, like, they're slow. They take time. You know what I mean? Like, hand embroidery, I learned recently, like, it was, like, my first time ever doing it, like, for real last year. Like, it took me 100 hours.
Yeah. I remember, I think I followed that process. Yeah. And, doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was doing that. I mean, I was doing that every weekend. I was super hungover. And I was like...
Yes. Oh, no, I remember that. I remember on, like, your stories, you're like, I'm hungover, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm in there. And it was amazing, though, as well, because also, like, in that process as well, while I was doing it, so I had to do, obviously, all this research before, because I was trying to learn all these different techniques. But also, while I was doing it, it was kind of, like, and I'm not a very woo-woo person, but it was kind of very spiritual, actually. Like, in doing this very, like, I'm doing this slow thing. There is no rushing it, like, honestly. I can only do it at the pace I'm doing. And I've got a lot of these, like, repetitive moments. And it gave me so much time to just meditate on things and think about stuff and, like, you know, make these big realizations, realizing a lot of things. And I said this one friend, and she was like, if you think about it, like sewing is very much like the earliest kind of forms of, like, coding we have. It's like, you know, you put all these fun inputs and then these things come out.
That is so, like, deeply profound,
right? Actually. And you get to have these fun thoughts when you spend time doing something that absolutely cannot be rushed. It's amazing. Like,
yes, and that is so, to find that and to be able to perform those in our current, like, state of the world, where everything is go,
right?
Improve value for stakeholders, like, you know, literally always trying to maximize our time and make more money and push, like, that is so, to stumble upon something like that is actually so rare and precious.
Yeah, dude. And so, it literally, it changed everything, because I mean, like, before that, I used to love being like, okay, I'm going to sew an outfit in a weekend, or I have 4 hours before I'm going out, I'm going to make something real quick, etc. And that process also just made me think about, like, if I really care about something and I'm going to put my time into it, why would I not put the most time I can into it? Why would I not take my time with it? Like, if I love this thing and I want to keep it for a long time, or if I'm someone who is selling it or whatever and I want someone else to keep it for a long time, why am I rushing it? Like, why am I trying to do this in 2 hours? If it's worth doing, like, let me go out of my way to do it. And I've also got to say now, I really love the idea of, like, I really like the idea that I want every single thing in my wardrobe to have a really long backstory. Like, these are not just a pair of 501 jeans. They're 501 jeans that I did some hand embroidery on because I read this thing about this, and, you know, I wanted to add that. Or my friend had gifted me this thing, and I did this to it and this to it, but, like, you know, there's something about that. And that's also what makes, like, getting dressed a lot more fun and easier now as well for me. Like, I never feel like, oh, I have nothing to wear. Not just because I could make something, but also, like, I've started to really cultivate, like, a wardrobe of things that I love everything I have so much. Like, actually, I wish I could wear them all at once every day. Like, yeah.
That's incredible. That's literally exactly the essence of sustainable fashion. Like, I feel like you're cracking the code here. I feel like we are stumbling upon
literally
because everyone, like, I mean, it's easy to pay all this lip service and say all these things, but you're putting in the work to make each item special, and that is literally the essence of sustainable fashion. And I'm really impressed by that and inspired by that. And before we go on too long, I just want to ask, because I'm like, oh, we'll have a quick little potty, just a little episode, but we can chat for ages and ages.
Yeah, we're having a fat
maybe
chat.
We need a part two. I just want to ask what your favorite item that you've ever made is.
Okay, it's a tough question. I have, so there's two parts. There's like the thing I wear the most often that I've made, but the thing I love the most. The thing I love the most, so yeah, my 100-hour embroidery project. I'm like, I always look at this, and actually, I just like, it's always in my closet, and I'm like, wow, she's kind of cool. Hello. Like,
yeah,
that's, I think, my
you ate that one.
Yeah, and it's the thing I spend the longest on. But like the thing I wear the most often, like all the time, is I'm actually just looking at my wardrobe now. Sorry. Like,
no, I love it. No, I love it. That's the goal, to be like, I wear all of this all the time.
Yeah.
Which one is the one I wear the most? Yeah.
Oh, actually, the thing I wear the most is I had my ex-boyfriend, oh my God, it was super fun. His mom used to love giving me old stuff that she had, and she was just like, because she didn't have a daughter, I guess.
That is such, and, oh, that is the jackpot.
Right? And she had all these, she has all these beautiful stuff from, like, the 80s and 90s, etc. And also from a time where, like, she has, like, things, like, made out of, like, genuine silk, real wool.
Oh, wow.
Some of the stuff is, like, handmade by her mother, etc. But one of the things she had just given me was, like, she gave me this big box of stuff, and then one of the things that there was, like, a big red corduroy skirt. And then I turned that into like a little two-piece set thing. And I kind of wear that a lot. Like, I love it. It's so fun. And I also think it's super fun to just be like, yeah, my boyfriend's mom, you know, she gave me this thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even like one of my favorite dresses was something that she gifted me. It's like one of the things that I haven't made.
That's
like,
amazing.
Yeah. I love that. I love, like, it's that, fun.
Yeah, it's a true, that whole thing of like the story behind the clothes.
Right?
And like the messages in it. Literally woven in the items.
Yeah,
I love it.
All this with me. Amazing.
Yes, yeah. No, my favorite pieces are also like hand-me-downs from my gran or my mom or my dad. Like, one of my most worn pieces of clothing is my dad. And him and I don't even talk. So it's nice to still keep that like essence of, you know, like that history.
And I'm glad he gave you some trips.
No, he gave me a trip. I like literally, it's like a blue shirt and I literally wear it to death. Like, it's almost all my content.
Yeah, I get that. Anyways, my dad hates letting me near his wardrobe, and I'm like, oh, dude, give me this fun time.
It's so good. So dad sneakers, I love it.
Yeah, and dad's spent money on clothes.
Yes, no, they do, because they don't ever shop.
Yeah.
And then they're just like one in one go. But okay, this has been such a fruitful conversation. I've had the best time. Thank you so much for joining me and like imparting, I don't think that's the right word, but you know, like giving me all this wisdom and hearing, like sharing your journey and your story. I feel like I've learned so much in just this like 40-minute conversation. So thank you so much for being here. And I feel like we'll have to do a part two eventually, because there's still so much that we could talk about.
Hey, you have my number.
Literally.
Whenever you want to chat.
Be ready, guys.
It's so much fun. Thanks for having
Amazing.
Me.
Amazing.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode and learned a thing or two, maybe, because I definitely did. And I feel like I could host Kansani in another episode later down the line, because we could talk for hours. And yeah, I hope that you tune in next month, because I'll be hosting an episode at least once a month with a guest, or even just by myself chatting away. And we'll be talking about things like, so, fashion, girlhood, sustainability, the environment, and all that good stuff. So I hope to see you again on this page soon.